Our next case this morning will be State v. Rainey.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Gregory Link on behalf of Mr. Rainey. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal if I could. Experience and logic dictate that a witness's assertion of a privilege, the assertion of the privilege, during an evidentiary hearing happens in open court. Mr. Rainey was denied his right to an open proceeding in this case during his motion for a new trial, and we'd ask the Court to reverse his convictions.
When was the assertion of the Fifth Amendment made here?
The assertion of the Fifth Amendment did not occur until the sealed portion of the transcript.
Wasn't it asserted by his attorney, or the witness's attorney?
No, the attorney says, I believe she's going to follow my advice. That's all he says. At no point does Ms. Mayhew take the stand under oath and assert a Fifth Amendment in response to any question. And importantly, that's what the Fifth Amendment requires. That's what United States Supreme Court case law says, and that's what Washington Supreme Court case law says. The assertion of a privilege is fact-specific, it's question-specific. Generally, there isn't a blanket privilege. It occurs by a witness under oath on the stand. That's when the privilege is asserted. That didn't happen here. And I think it's important to point out that Judge Rogers understood that. He was initially going to call her to the stand to have her be asked questions and allow her to assert the privilege. And it was only then that the prosecutor interjected and said, no, you got to do it in closed proceedings. And when we get there, if we look at what Judge Rogers does, he puts her under oath immediately and then asks questions, and she then asserts the Fifth Amendment. That is how it's done. It's done by a witness on the stand under oath. I think it's important to look...
Let's go to a different question. That's the remedy you get if you're right. Why does this taint the trial at all? Why don't you just get a new hearing on the motion for a new trial?
That's because it's structural error, and the remedy for structural error is a new trial in the Washington Supreme Court.
Well, the remedy for structural error in the trial is a new trial. Do you have a case that says a remedy for something post-trial that's structural gets you a new trial?
First off, no judgment had been entered in this case. It was pre-judgment still.
Okay. Do you have a case, any case, where post-jury verdict, something happens that you can fairly characterize as structural error that results in a new trial?
Structural error means a new trial. The United States...
Say those words, but do you have a case that dissects the words and actually analyzes how the error damaged the structure of the trial as opposed to the structure of the post-trial proceeding?
No, because the nature of structural error is such that you can't do that. That's what structural error means, and that's why in Bone Club...
Okay, that's not what structural error means. Structural error has been described by the federal courts to mean that the particular proceeding structure was unfair, not that the entire prosecution was unfair, because if we accept your argument, the whole process is unfair and should result in a dismissal every time there is structural error, and that is not what happened in the federal system.
Not a dismissal, a reversal and a new trial. And Bone Club dealt with this exact question. In Bone Club, the state was arguing that under Waller, we can separate things out. And Bone Club said, we understand that's what the federal courts do, but we're not doing that here. And the court even said, we even acknowledge that suppression hearing, we could have that same suppression hearing in front of that same judge, and that same judge could reach the same result, but we're still going to require a new trial, because that's what structural error is. We don't get to have a piecemeal approach to the remedy question.
That happened, wasn't it, before trial that could have affected how the trial proceeded?
I guess the response to that then, too, is that the state hasn't identified a single case in which the court has engaged in that structural error inquiry. In every case that has gone to the Washington Supreme Court, they've said steadfastly this is structural error, and structural error means a new trial. There is not a Washington Supreme Court case that says otherwise. The state has not identified one. And I don't think this court should follow that course in light of what Bone Club said. Again, they rejected the Waller analysis.
But why did they reject it? Didn't they say that this could have affected the trial as well? They didn't just say this is structural error, we don't care about anything else. Didn't they have
Bone Club allowed that it may the same result may have occurred post after a new suppression hearing. They specifically allowed that the judge might reach the exact same.
Wasn't there a problem that they only could say it might be the same result? They couldn't say it would be the same result? And that would affect the trial that follows?
Well, I should say this. I stand by my statement that there is not a single case that has parsed the remedy that way.
How about Wise? Doesn't Wise address that and say there are separable matters that
they allowed that there might be, but they did not follow that course. They suggested, and all they were doing was citing to Waller, and Waller says that. Mm-hmm. I can't disagree with that. That's what the U.S. Supreme Court said. But that's not what Wise did. And Bone Club still rejected that. That argument was squarely in front of them in Bone Club, and they said, no, we're not going to do that here. And again, I think, importantly, that the nature of this error, the nature of an open court's error, can't be measured by the weight of the evidence. It can't be measured by whether the result would have been the same. The difficulty here is that the public wasn't there, and we don't know what might have happened. That, again, is the nature of structural error. We can't measure what might have happened.
Well, we do know one thing, that whether the public was there or not, the verdict would have been the same since it had already been rendered.
And again, Bone Club says that the fact that the result may have been the same is irrelevant to the inquiry. We don't know that it would have been the same necessarily. We don't know that the witness would have said the same thing when the public was allowed to see her. That's the nature of the right.
Are you speaking of Bone Club generically, or are you speaking about the particular facts of Bone Club and how it particularly as a case came out?
I'm speaking specifically of the holding in Bone Club. The state made this precise argument that all we need to do is give them a new suppression hearing, and the court said no. And allowed that even if the result of a new suppression hearing was exactly the same, that nonetheless, the nature of this error required a new trial.
Back to the more fundamental question. You're not arguing that if there's a bona fide assertion of a Fifth Amendment privilege, that an in-camera hearing is appropriate?
I'm not arguing that because that's not what, no. What we're suggesting is when a witness asserts a privilege, that has to happen in open court. And I think we can...
What is the need, when the court has specific knowledge, here the defendant's supplemental motion for a new trial says this witness is going to turn prior statements, now going to get different statements. The court ultimately says we better get an attorney for this client. The attorney comes in and says, I think she's going to follow my advice, as you say. Why doesn't the court then have, with the use of reasonable judicial imagination, a complete understanding and specific knowledge of what the issue is that allows them to go in camera?
For a number of reasons, and I'll go ahead and use a minute of my rebuttal time if I could. First off, the attorney can't assert the privilege. It would be no different in a trial if the attorney walked into court and said, look, my client's going to assert the privilege, so no bother. That's not what it's the witness personally who gets to make that decision. The attorney can say this has been my advice to her, and I think she's going to do it, but until she takes the stand and does it under oath and asserts that privilege, it hasn't happened. It would be no different if this were a motion for a new trial predicated on a Brady claim, where we know what the police officer may have testified to at trial, and a defendant has an affidavit from someone else saying that person destroyed a piece of evidence and didn't tell the prosecutor. Now we want to put that police officer on the stand, and his attorney comes in and says, you know what, he's going to assert the Fifth. Now I think the public has a right to hear that police officer take the stand and assert a privilege if he's going to. That's the nature of the public trial, right? We can't trivialize it, and we have to hold the formality matters here, because how that privilege is going to be asserted by an individual to a question matters to the public, and that's the nature of the right. Thank you.
Thank you. You have your 2 minutes.
Good morning, Your Honors and Counsel. May it please the Court. My name is Lindsay Grieve on behalf of King County representing the State of Washington. This Court should affirm Rainey's conviction for attempting to elude a pursuing police officer and hold that no public trial right was violated. Here, 5 months after Rainey was found guilty, the trial court held an in-camera hearing to determine whether a witness held a privilege against self-incrimination and whether she had a factual basis to assert such privilege. Even if this court were to find that Mr. Rainey's public trial right was violated, the proper remedy here is not reversal. The proper remedy here would be to remand for the court to inquire into the Bone Club factors on the record to make a determination of whether the closure here is proper.
Hasn't the court been very clear that you can't wait till after you've closed the hearing to do your Bone Club analysis?
Yes, but in this instance, no Bone Club analysis was necessary. This is not a type of hearing where the public trial right attaches under the experience and logic test. So under the experience and logic test...
Well, you're kind of confusing me here. You said even if we decided that the public trial right had been violated, which I guess it would be if the Bone Club factor is attached, then we could just send it back. But why don't we start at the beginning and try to figure out whether there's been a violation of the public trial right?
Certainly.
Without the person standing up in court and, as Mr. Link envisions, taking the Fifth herself under oath.
Right. Looking at the experience and logic test, under both prongs have to be answered in the affirmative for a public trial right to attach to the type of proceeding. And here, under the experience and logic test, both prongs are answered in the negative. Under the experience test, the inquiry is whether the place and process has historically been open to the press and to the public. And here, in determination of whether a witness has a privilege to assert their Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination has not been historically open.
How about the preliminary question, whether the witness is going to assert the privilege?
Whether that should be open or not?
What's our experience? What's our historical treatment of that question?
Well, here I don't think we need to reach that question. What happened?
Mr. Link suggests that the only way that privilege can be asserted is by a witness under oath. Is that right?
Well, the court needs to make a factual determination of whether a witness does hold the privilege. And so the important thing is whether the court does have the facts before it to make such a determination.
Well, someone can have a privilege and not assert it. The question is the witness going to assert it? And Mr. Link has represented to us that the case law from our federal system and our state system both require that the witness be under oath and asked a question and assert the privilege. Is he right?
I don't recall seeing any cases to that that speak to that authority. And
is there another way to assert the Fifth Amendment privilege?
What the court needed to determine here was whether or not Ms. Mayhew held a Fifth Amendment privilege based on the facts. The court closed the proceeding to hold.
Well, is that really all it has to, or does it have to determine that she is in fact going to assert it?
And Ms. Mayhew said she was going to assert the privilege, and when asked,
what does our case law require in the way of evidence that a witness is going to assert it? Is it sufficient that a lawyer says the witness is going to assert it, or does the witness, as Mr. Link represents, actually have to be under oath and say, I'm going to assert it?
I think the court needs to have a factual basis to make such a determination, and here the court had it. The court knew that the witness had signed two statements under penalty of perjury that were opposite, one saying that she was in fact the driver and one saying that the defendant, Mr. Rainey, was the driver. When the court held the in-camera hearing, the court asked if she was going to assert her privilege. She said yes. When asked what the basis of the privilege was, her attorney explained that those two statements were the basis. And the court
That happened, you say, in open court, or that happened after the courtroom had been closed?
The explanation for the two reasons happened in closed courtroom.
How about her answer that she was going to assert the privilege? Where did that happen?
Her counsel represented to the court in open court.
She said that she was going to assert
that privilege. That was in closed hearing.
Okay. But she said that herself.
I believe she did. I believe the court advised her why the proceeding had been closed, what the purpose of the inquiry was once Ms. Mayhew was brought into the courtroom and once it was closed. And she said she was planning to assert it. She said, mm-hmm. And then the counsel explained what the basis was.
Okay, I don't mean to parse words, but she said she was planning to assert it or she was asserting it.
And, Your Honor, I'm sorry. I have to look at the record to make sure that I don't misspeak on that point.
Well, what about the other example that Mr. Link gave in argument? Is the rule that you're asking the court to adopt broad enough so that it includes every situation? I mean, in other words, let's say you had a police officer and had been asked to come in under oath to discuss a Brady issue or something similar, and the officer might or might not take the Fifth Amendment. Should the officer be able to not do that in open court? Should it just be a matter of the prosecutor coming in and saying, well, I think, probably, or I have reason to believe that he's going to, or?
Historically, whether a witness is able to assert a Fifth Amendment privilege, it's up to the trial court to determine whether there is such a factual basis.
Question. I mean, it's the question of is it not the question? What is the will of the witness? Does the witness assert the Fifth Amendment?
The witness does assert.
There may always be a basis for doing so, but isn't the public often interested in whether this individual with free will, with a position of responsibility of some kind, are they going to assert the Fifth Amendment, or are they going to talk?
Whether they're going to assert or not, the public is interested. The basis for that, though, should be something that's held in camera. Because if it...
Well, do you then draw a line between the witness announcing the decision to exercise it and the determination of whether the privilege is available to the witness?
No, I wouldn't draw that line. I think it's up to the trial court to determine whether or not that witness has the privilege.
Okay, once the court determines the witness has the privilege available to them, where should the next step, the witness's exercise of will, as Judge Becker described it, occur?
I don't think it needs to be the witness, or I don't think it matters whether it's the witness or the court that says that the privilege does attach. I think it just
needs
to...
That's not my question. The privilege is attached. Now the question is, you can assert the privilege. Are you going to?
And here the witness said she was going to.
Okay, but where should that occur?
I think that could happen either in closed courtroom or open courtroom.
Okay. Well, if it could happen in an open courtroom, why is it proper to close the courtroom when it happens?
When looking at the experience and logic test, this type of an inquiry is one which the answer is negative under both prongs of the test. By history, an in-camera hearing to make this sort of determination has been historically held in camera.
What history are you speaking of in particular? It seems like there's a lot of history that involves people publicly taking the Fifth.
Right.
And various kinds of proceedings.
Yes. There are a number of cases. I've cited to State v. White, and State v. White from this court also lists a number of cases, Easton v. Arndt, Seventh Elect Church v. Rogers, which say that it's proper that this type of inquiry to determine whether a Fifth Amendment right attaches should be held in a closed courtroom.
Okay, you keep talking about whether it attaches, and I don't think that's the question we're focusing on.
I'm sorry.
We're drawing a distinction between the determination of whether the witness has a Fifth Amendment privilege available to the witness and whether the witness exercises his or her will. And you keep talking about the determination of attachment appropriately determined in camera hearing. Do you have any case law that says that the determination of the will is appropriately determined in camera?
I believe that in Easton v. Arndt and in Seventh Elect Church that the determination was something that happened in camera. That's my understanding from reading the cases. I'd have to look at them closer. Turning to the logic test,
Well, we know in White that the witness in the closed session, in camera view, said, "I'm not asserting the Fifth Amendment," said, "Double," and hearing's over.
Correct.
So that's one illustration of when it came to light in the closed hearing.
Yes, and White cites those other cases, the Easton case and also Seventh Elect Church.
Can an attorney, as the agent of a witness, stand up and say, this witness is going to assert the Fifth Amendment privilege, and we ask the court to conduct an in-camera review to determine whether they have that privilege?
Yes, absolutely. Under the experience and logic test, that is a type of hearing where the public trial rights are not implicated.
And what authority do we have that tells us that the attorney, rather than the witness themselves, can make that assertion?
Well, while the witness is the one who makes the holds the right, it's up to the trial court to make a determination of whether or not there's a factual basis for such a right. So if the trial court had such a factual basis, that would be sufficient.
Yeah.
And I see that I'm running out of time. We would ask this court to affirm Mr. Rainey's conviction.
Thank you.
Judge Varela, in addressing some of your questions, first off, in White, the witness was actually called to the stand, put under oath, and then asserted the Fifth. She then talked to an attorney. They went in camera, and she said, "No, I'm not asserting it." But she asserted it under oath on the stand when called to testify by the prosecutor. So under experience and logic, once again, that's where we do it. Judge Rogers, again, if we want to know what the experience of trial judges is, we look at what he was going to do. if we go to page 62 of the transcript, excuse me, 61, the judge says, okay, why don't we complete the record? I'll call her to the stand briefly, and you can just ask her if she's planning on doing it. Judge Rogers understood that experience dictates that the witness assert the privilege in court. And it was only then that the prosecutor interjected and said, no, you got to do it in closed chambers. Judge Rogers understood experience requires that it be done in court. He tried to do that, and the prosecutor interjected.
Do you think the holding that you're asking this court to make in this case is inconsistent with the White case?
Not at all, for a number of reasons. First off, she asserted the right initially in court. Second of all, she immediately withdrew any assertion of the claim. And so there really was never the in-camera hearing that the state and this court says as much. Second of all, I think White suffers a bit from circularity in its conclusion that in-camera hearings have always been in-camera and thus closed to the public without actually analyzing the question of whether they're properly in-camera. And I think that's really the issue.
Well, what do you think comes next? I mean, suppose you're right. Suppose that she has to be called and take the Fifth in public, and she says, I am taking the Fifth. Then what? Can there be a closed hearing?
I don't dispute that that might be necessary in some instances. I don't think it's required in every instance. But even the cases that the state has cited to in its briefs, Berkeley, for instance, it doesn't require that it be done in camera. It suggests that if it's necessary, you could do that. And I don't think that's the issue here.
Your issue is the threshold process has to be open.
There is value to the public in that Brady violation case where a police officer is called to the stand and asserts a privilege not to testify. There is value to the public in hearing Ms. Mayhew do it, too.
Did you have a particular case in mind, or did you just make up the Brady case?
That's a hypothetical I've come up with. But again, what we're talking about here is the assertion of the right, not just in this case, but in every evidentiary hearing, trials, suppression hearings, Brady motions. So I'd ask the court to reverse Mr. Rainey's conviction. Thank you.
Thank you.